Hi, everybody. I am so excited. I've been planning this for 9 months. Pete contacted me about October and asked if I could do a buy-in program. And I said, sure. And then after a month of trying to design something, I realized he didn't want buy-in, really. He wanted to learn how to generate change. He wanted congruent conscious change. So what I did is I've spent the last months figuring out the specific elements of our brain that lead to behavior generation and conscious choice, because most of what we do, unfortunately, is unconscious. So I got us to a place where we can know how specifically we can enter the right data to get the right results. Now, my focus is really, really on how. I've spent my life focusing on how and how to get the brain to consciously do what we want. Like many of you, I've spent my life trying to be all I can be and trying to be a good person and trying to serve people. And I've been a lifelong learner and have found really a lot of wonderful tools and implements to help me. But somehow, maybe it's just because I wasn't very good at it, I couldn't figure out how to get it right. So I learned the what and the why, but I remained a victim of my unconscious. And I believed if I meditated enough, and if I was a good enough Buddhist, and if I learned to use the precepts of NLP well enough, if I worked out enough, if I had enough willpower, if I had enough discipline, that I would be able to achieve what I want. But it didn't always get me what I wanted. So I thought, well, maybe I have a hidden agenda, and maybe I'm sabotaging myself, and maybe I really don't want this. So I was beating myself up all the time. And finally, at some point in my learning over the decades, I realized how specifically brains generate new behaviors. So what I've done over the past decades is I've coded the 13 steps to systemic change, and I've trained about 100,000 salespeople to help buyers facilitate their pre-sales change management. I developed a new form of training that facilitates learners in how to learn. I've worked with behavior mod applications to help people in exercise regimens and with health issues buy into the change that they were going to be making. And now I have a whole new model to facilitate congruent change and working with the unconscious. I've been thinking about change and how since I was a kid, because I always experienced the world a bit differently than other people. I didn't know, and my parents and teachers didn't know, especially in those days, that I had Asperger's. In fact, I wasn't diagnosed till I was 61 years old. And I was always living in this horrible world of confusion where I would say something and get a response really different than what I expected, or I would hear people differently than the way other people heard them. I didn't understand, and I sort of still don't understand the social rules. And I'm still confused by the way people react to me. My bubby, my grandmother, was the one who really accepted me. My parents were first generation uneducated working people, and they thought they had to break me to make me normal because they wanted me to fit in, and whatever they were doing wasn't working with me. So I ended up with PTSD and borderline personality disorder, which took me decades of therapy and personal work to get myself mostly right. I mean, the cost was pretty high, but that's life, right? And I was desperate to fit in, to stop making everybody angry. I was being harmed at school. I was being harmed at home. And I was inadvertently harming people. So by the time I was 11, which is sort of really young for this, I decided that I was going to make a world where people wouldn't harm each other, that people would have choice over not harming one another. I was 11 years old. So beginning in 1957, I started running away to a friend's house. She was a friend's mother's house. She was a therapist. And she would say to me, "You didn't do anything wrong. You didn't deserve that. You're not a bad person. You didn't do anything bad." And she sort of made me feel better about myself. But then my parents knew that that was my best friend. So they'd come knocking on the door, and they'd come rampaging through the house to find me. And she would slide me under the bed. It was like, it was low to the ground, but I was little. So I could fit under the bed so that my parents couldn't find me. And that thankfully went on through middle school. And I sort of think she changed my life and saved my life. Without knowing what I was doing, really, I began tracking interactions and conversations. I used to walk around with a pad, even when I was 11 and 12. And I used to say, okay, this person said this, and this person said this, and why did she say this when I think he said that? So I would try to figure out how conversations worked because I really didn't understand them. Then I was, there was a reservoir not far from my house, and I was always writing circles and arrows because I think in circles and I hear in circles. And that made no sense to people because everyone else seems to think and hear sequentially. So I would make circles and arrows to try to make things fit together from the time I was 11. What I didn't know then either was that Aspies think in systems and hear in systems. So that was, at least once I knew that later on when I was 61, everything began to make sense. Because of the relationship with my parents, they refused to send me to college. So I secretly put in an application and I took a bus up one weekend when I was 16 years old to Syracuse School of Journalism. And I told them that I couldn't afford to go, that my parents would refuse to pay me, but they had money, but they wouldn't give me any. What do I do? So he got me a job as a nanny and cleaning houses so that I could work my way through school. And this family, they were so kind and they taught me love. They were just they saved my life too. There was always someone along the way that like saved my life. So I graduated with a degree in journalism and a minor in sociology. And there wasn't any such thing as behavioral science degrees in those days, or I really would have done it. In 1970, one of my first jobs as a social worker, I ran a pre-discharge group in an acute schizophrenic hospital. And I studied with a noted sociologist. And still focused on how, I developed a program to teach the patients how to behave, how to communicate once they left. And then I created that program for the doctors and the nurses on the wards. And then I used that as the basis for my master's thesis in health education. In 1980, I started up a tech company in London, Stuttgart, and Hamburg. And I also started a not-for-profit for kids with my son's illness. And during that time, I also studied with the greats of NLP, and I got my practitioner, master prac, and then we took a third beyond year. So there's a small group of 35 of us who have completed 3 years of study of NLP. You'll see a lot of NLP because I think the NLP structure is just terrific. But NLP believes that if you do the SCORE model, if you do whatever model, that you can help someone change from the outside. I don't believe it's possible for anybody to change from the outside. And I don't think it's anyone's responsibility from the outside to change anyone else. So what I teach always is the how that people can change themselves. I can facilitate the how, but I can't cause someone else to change. It's not my responsibility. By 1988, I had developed a change facilitation model, and that's when I began teaching it in the field of sales as buying facilitation. And I taught my first program, How Buyers Buy, to KLM in Holland in 1988. And then I wrote my first book on it in 1992, and then my book Selling with Integrity came out on the bestsellers list. And then from 2013 to 16, I figured out how the brain hears or doesn't hear, and what happens in the gap between what somebody says and what somebody hears. So so I did the how there also. So there you have it. I've spent my life figuring out how, and I've dedicated it to learning, being a better person, training, and translating the how of change. And in this program, I commit to helping you consciously figure out how you can generate your best behaviors and habits. All right, and I have some new concepts to integrate into your other tools so that you have a broader array of tools to help you be all you can be. Okay, so now you understand my passion for how, and let's begin, because I'm going to tell you some really cool stuff that's sort of surprising. Believe it or not, change, developing habits, and generating new behaviors is easy. It's not hard. We're just going about it in the wrong place in our brain. I see change as a transformation, not a modification or an alteration. The conventional methods of change concentrate on the why and the what of behavior. And that actually causes us to repeat what we've been doing that we don't like, because it gets to the source. It doesn't get to the source. All it does is try to change the behaviors. It doesn't get to the source of how the behaviors were originated. And that's why most training fails. And that's why we can't keep weight off, because we keep trying to do what we've always done. And we think we have the willpower to do that same thing better, but it's not even possible. See, change is a physiology thing. It's a brain thing. It is not a behavior thing. Here's the sad but exciting thing. We can't change what our brains have already designed, okay? It's not possible. When we give an input and there's a synapse created that creates a behavior, it is there permanently. We cannot change our synapses. They're set. But as per neuroplasticity, we can always create new behaviors. Our brains are always happy to create and generate a new synapse, which is what carries the signal, and a new behavior. And that's what we're going to be doing. We're going to be generating a new synapse. And tomorrow is even self-proving, because you're going to generate a synapse real time tomorrow. So today I'm going to introduce you to the brain elements involved. And I'm going to give you the foundation and the vocabulary that we're going to be working with during our whole time together. I'm going to be introducing it in little chunks, and then I'm going to be repeating the same element and then giving you more data, and then repeating and giving you more data as we begin to use it and fill it out. So those of you that are looking for immediate definitions full immediately, hang on, I'm going to get there. All right, so I have a question. Do you know how you choose what you do? So we think we do it consciously, but our behaviors, our habits, our choices are merely physiologic reactions between your body, your mind, chemicals, and signal processing. That's right. Your behaviors, your habits, your ideas, anything you do are just a function of your brain, and they are chemically induced. Your brain doesn't care whether you do apples or oranges, or whether it's something good or something bad for you. Your brain doesn't care. It gets a signal. It does what it's told to do. So all of this stuff that we put on it, that we're doing something bad and we're failing, our brain doesn't care. You give it a signal, it does what it's told. And that's what we're going to do. You're not bad. You're not wrong. You're not even right. We're just putting a signal in and getting your response. So in this program, we're going to be putting in new signals. Okay, now I approach change a bit differently from the books and the theories and the scientific research that you've heard. And my stuff incorporates neurobiology and brain sciences and NLP and habits and systems and listening and biases and some original thinking that I added to it. So in our time together, we're going to be talking about the steps of how our brains trigger an action. And then we're going to have interventions in there. We're going to give it the right cues to get the right result. All right. And then how to get mind-body integration without resistance, and how to organize your brain's neural pathways to reach the goals you want. So before now, you've tried to change behaviors by trying to change those behaviors, but you didn't alter your physiology. So I'm going to introduce you to how the brain is structured. And I'm gonna go offline for a bit, and Pete's gonna put out the first little chart so I can show you how your brain is structured. If you need to see my face, I'm up in the corner. If you miss me, hi, I'm here. But you also have a copy in your packet, so you can put that in front of you or just look online. All right, so Pete's put up the smallest chart. All right, so here's a simple view of the main triggering elements in your brain and route and pathway. From the thought to the action, these are the elements that signal you to act. They're the root of everything, and we're going to build on these going forward. Notice that the behaviors are at the end. They're the output. They are the last element, all right? And as I said, once a pathway is formed, it's permanent. We can't change it, but we can create new ones. So look closer at the chart. On the left there is the cue. Briefly, your cue is your unconscious signal, the narrative you tell yourself, your motivation, your goal. It's the trigger that creates the chemical that starts the signaling process. Everything you do, everything you seek, everything you think, every idea you have starts off as a cue that triggers a chemical signal. Okay, so that's our beginning. From the cue, the signal then goes to the CEN. Okay, that's called the Central Executive Network. That's our traffic cop. That says stop, go, or learn. The CEN regulates our emotion and our self-awareness, and its main determinants are our identity and beliefs, and we're going to be working with those a lot tomorrow. So if your CEN agrees and a synapse already exists, it's a go. It's like getting into the car and starting to drive. It's a go. You don't even think about it. The synapse exists. If it doesn't have a synapse available, but your CEN says yes, that's when we're going to learn. We're going to get to that in a minute. But I wanted you to understand the main elements that we're going to be working with. We're going to work with the cue, with the CEN, with beliefs and identity issues, and then the output is the behavior. Okay? All right. Can I get back on, Pete? So what I'm going to do now is I'm going to give you an example of my own personal journey, and just to follow this chart so you can see how it works, all right? So I decided at some point decades ago that I was going to be a healthy person and that I needed to go to the gym, because I thought, well, I believed that the gym was the way I needed to go, and I would go when I felt like it, which I assumed was going to be 3 days a week. Oh, no, no, no. I would set my alarm. I would do visualizations. I'd meditate on it. I'd have my willpower, and I'm going to the gym, but I never got there more than twice a week, sometimes even once a week. So when I didn't go, I would beat myself up and say, oh, you're so lazy and you're such a bad person and you don't really mean that. And I did this for a very long time. I would even give myself rewards when I went. Okay, there was this great Starbucks nearby, and I didn't have time, but I would say, you can go to Starbucks if you get to the gym. Nope, didn't help. Then the more I learned about the brain, I realized I wasn't putting in the proper cue for myself, the right motivation, the right trigger, the right goal. So I changed the wording of my cue and changed my identity and belief factors, and generated a whole new pathway that triggered the behaviors I wanted. So here's exactly what I said, and I'm going to repeat this later, okay? And we're going to learn how to populate your cue so you get what you want. But here's what I did. I said to myself, I want to be a healthy person who has the knowledge and discipline to learn and execute healthy choices on a very specific time scale. In my CEN, in my beliefs and identity, I said, I am a healthy person. I am healthy in mind, body, and spirit. To keep my body healthy, I am willing and able to go to the gym at very specific times, and I will do the necessary homework to learn the workout routines that are best for my health, the food that will support my workouts, and I have the vision and dedication to maintain these routines over time. It sounds like a lot of words, but you know what? It did the trick. I used specific words in the order that my brain needed them, and I consciously instructed my brain to get the exact outcome it worked that I wanted. And it worked. So for decades, I've been working out consistently for decades, okay? The problem was that it wasn't that I didn't want to work out. The problem was that I unconsciously and unwittingly initiated the wrong response, the wrong synapse that triggered the wrong behaviors. You're going to learn how to do it right. It took me decades of getting it wrong. You're going to learn how to do it right. I want to talk about behaviors for a minute because I think this is really cool and you're either going to get annoyed or love it. But since so much of what we do involves behaviors, I'm going to introduce you to what behaviors really are. I thought that behaviors occurred because I wanted them to. And if I told myself to behave, I would. I wasn't aware of how inflexible they are and that they're merely chemical responses. From the chart, you can see the end there, that behaviors are the outputs of incoming signals. They are nothing more than your brain's response to a set of chemical instructions. They have no meaning to your brain. Okay, I said that before, but it's really hard to believe. I know it took Pete a while to understand that. Behaviors provide a real-time representation of who you are. Behaviors are a translation, an expression of what you believe and what you want to show the world are your norms, your history, your values, your rules. Your behaviors are the embodiment of what you stand for. Okay? And they were designed and maintained to keep you being you. You get up every day with the same habits and the same behaviors because your brain is keeping you there. Your behaviors are already in your synapses, ready to go off whenever you need them. It's all there. And all of our behaviors, whether we like them now or not, were created at some point in time because we wanted them and we needed them. They're the very last chain on the element, the very last element on the chain of events. Okay, and they're sent along a neural pathway from the cue, signal, CEN. I'm going to get into this very, very specifically in a minute. Because we don't realize that behaviors are tied to signals that trigger them, we mistakenly think we have more control over them than we have. Thousands of books and millions of books and programs have been written on how to change behaviors. But when we focus on changing the behaviors, we're merely trying to change the output and this without changing the synapse. So we end up getting the exact same behavior we were trying to change. So when we give it a partial input or try to change what is already there, our brain goes down the same synapse. People using behavior mod often fail with their diets or smoking cessation. The diets are fine. There's nothing wrong with the diets. We're just inputting the wrong signals and we're causing the brain to signal the same behavior that didn't work the first time. To make a change, we have to put in a different cue, change the CEN, create new neural pathways. Change doesn't mean adjusting. Change means transforming, all right? So I'm going to give you an analogy that I use all the time. Think of a forward-moving robot. It was programmed to move forward, and then you buy it, and you say, it really needs to move backwards, and you tell it to move backwards. You show it a video of other robots moving backwards. You try to push it backwards. The only way that darn thing is going to move backwards is if you reprogram it. All right? Now, one more thing, habits. After you use a synapse a few times, it becomes habituated. It's a habit. It's hardwired. There is no such thing as a bad habit. There's just a habit that you created a long time ago that you don't like anymore. But it's in there and it's hardwired. So whatever you deem is a bad habit is one of 1,000 trillion synapses that you have developed that have an action attached and that you agreed to and liked at some point. And when you input a signal that's anywhere close to this synapse, and that synapse picks up a word that's in your cue that's similar to that synapse is off and running, doing the one thing you didn't like, and you call it a bad habit. You're acting in response to your signals. That's all your behaviors are. Okay? Now that you know the fundamentals, I'm going to give you the whole set of elements. They're all the same as what we just learned, but I'm just going to add a little bit that I actually developed. I'm going to go offline. Pete, would you please put up the whole chart? All right. So there's the same top part. You see that? And then the bottom part that I developed was the trial loop. And you see all those arrows going around? I'm going to explain the whole thing to you, but we're going to start again. I'm going to lead you through the entire chart now in sort of bullet points. So first you see a stimulus, a cue that comes from some sort of a motivation, a goal, an idea that sends an incoming signal that gets translated according to what it thinks it's heard. Now I wrote a whole book on what we think we hear, because what happens is our synapses get involved and they get biased immediately. But it's important that you know that whatever the signal is that gets put in, your cue will hear it the way it thinks it's heard it, whether it's accurate or not. It then becomes a signal that goes down the pathway of neurons and dendrons. That's the space between the cue and the CEN, to the cell body nucleus, that's the CEN and the prefrontal cortex, the central executive network, which sorts, filters, translates, and routes the request through existing beliefs and norms and historic actions. Your CEN, again, is your traffic cop. If the incoming signal is incongruent with your beliefs, it gets turned off and stopped immediately. That's when you get resistance or sabotage, or you forget stuff. That's your brain saying, I don't like what your cue was, and I don't like what you're making me do. If the signal is congruent, it will first automatically seek, and this is really important because tomorrow this is going to come into play big time. It will seek the closest approximation of a synapse that exists. Okay? Which means if I say the word belief, or I say the word habit, or I say the word behavior or change, your brain will go down the automatic synapse, the assumption of what you believe to be true, whether or not that's accurate. We're going to be checking on this tomorrow, okay? So the first thing your brain does when it gets a cue and your CEN says cool beans is it seeks out the closest available synapse. And you know what? You're going to see this tomorrow. It fights like hell to maintain that signal. All right? We're going to be on the lookout for this tomorrow. So this is an immediate go. If there is no existing pathway and there isn't a good match, your brain now has a new job to do. If there's a match and there's no pathway, this is when you have to generate a new pathway. This is when you generate a new behavior. This is when we go down the trial loop, all right? So this is where we have to add knowledge. We have to practice and fail and practice and fail. We have to get buy-in. And we go around this in different ways, in different sequences for everything we're learning, or people will do it the same, but every person will do it different. It's here where you need information. If you try to get information in earlier, the information will be biased and your brain won't know how to use it. All right, so as you're going around your learning loop, if your filters perceive a risk, it'll go to the stop. But if the risk is deemed manageable, that's why the stop has a double arrow, a double carrot there. It'll go back and allow you to keep trying. And eventually what will come out, if you don't have it stop, is a new synapse, a new behavior, a new action. That's what we're going to be learning to do. Every one of your behaviors, every thought, every idea, every action has its own neural pathway. We have 1,000 trillion neural pathways that set off one of 100 billion neurons and dendrons. And then your cues input these as signals. It's like all the stars in the sky, right? That's how many neurons and synapses are in your brain right now. Sometimes we're going to, so this is the cue. Sometimes you give yourself a conscious signal, like, I want to wash my hands. Sometimes it's unconscious, like when you walk up the stairs. There's always data going on in your brain. I have read in two books that there are a million pieces of data entering our brains at any given time. Now, I personally think that's an awful lot. I mean, I know there must be air and temperature and light and skin, but I don't understand the million thing, but that's what they say, so there's a lot. All right, remember that when you give yourself a cue, it signals a chemical process, and you're going to be surprised how acutely your cue will take the wording that you give it and act on that to determine your output. All right, let's go to the CEN again. The job of your central executive network is to keep you safe. It filters all the incoming signals and weighs them against your beliefs for risk. Now, this is cool too. When your CEN receives the signal from the queue, that goes down 100 trillion synapses and 1,000 trillion synaptic connections to check for the closest available approximation of an existing pathway for a behavior you've already used before. This is really important. Your brain always prefers to use what's already there. Again, you're going to see tomorrow how hard it fights to do that. This is pretty cool too, the time it takes your brain from a cue to an action is 5/100ths of a second. It's unimaginable, okay? And it's automatic. The problem is the brain can't tell how close the approximation is to the cue. So if there's a couple of words in the cue that the brain says, I know how to do this, that's when you say, I'm gonna lose weight. Now the brain goes, oh, I know how to lose weight. We've done this before, and it's off and running, and then you put it back on, or you start smoking again, or whatever, because it's using the same synapse. Okay. When the CEN says no, it's a stop, and you will call this a failure, but you know something? It's not failure. NLP has a precept called there's no failure, only feedback. This is where that comes in. It's merely your brain taking care of you. It's a very useful bit of data. The trial loop occurs when the CEN says it's cool, we can go forward, and there's no synapse. It must generate a new synapse, a new behavior to accommodate this new idea, this new cue. And this is what we're going to be doing starting tomorrow. We're going to be developing a new synapse. Look at the trial loop. The trial loop potentially will develop this new neural pathway that's compatible with the cue. Notice all the arrows. It's an iterative process. Each learning situation will have a different path. Checking for buy-in, checking against the beliefs, checking if you need a new knowledge, books, coaches, classes to practice new behaviors. Okay. One of the elements is failure, and failure is part of the learning process. I mean, think of the tennis players. How many bazillions of times have they practiced and failed and practiced and failed? And as you'll see tomorrow, whenever you learn anything new, there's so much failure involved. So failure is your friend, okay? Failure is built in as a way to determine that something else is needed. It's an indicator of process. It is not an indicator of risk. It's how or when you approach that failure and decide to keep going or not that determines your outcome. This is where your emotions kick in. We're going to keep an eye on this going forward, all right? Now, as you can see from the chart, the end result, the output is the behavior. Sometimes when we try to change a behavior by trying to change a behavior, we start at the end where the behavior already exists as part of a fully formed synapse. Not to mention when you give yourself an old signal, your brain will automatically respond to that. So to get a new behavior, and what we're going to be doing from now on is we're going to get the right cue put in, we're going to get it approved by the CEN, and we're going to go down our trial loop in a way that conforms with our belief system. When we get resistance, remember, we are actually setting up our own resistance. Isn't that awful? We do it for ourselves. All right, Pete, can I come back on? Hi, everybody. So now I'm going to give you more details of how I programmed my synapses. I started giving you an example of me going to the gym when we started. All right, so hang with me as I'm going to go back over it again because it was probably a mouthful, so I'll say it again, and then I'm going to show you what I did in my trial loop. So I start off by saying I want to be a healthy person who has the knowledge and discipline to learn and execute healthy choices. That was my cue. In my CEN, I am a healthy person in mind, body, and spirit. To keep my body healthy, I am willing to go to the gym at very specific times and do the necessary homework to learn workout routines and best food choices for my health to maintain over time. Okay, so that was my cue. That was my CEN. Now I'm going to add my TL, my trial loop for you. The first thing I did is I went online to research healthy workouts. That is a bad search. So I got 4,000 million pieces of data and I was overwhelmed. I said, no, that's okay. I'm done. I'm not doing this. It was just too much for me. So that was my first failure. So I couldn't get buy-in for that. So I still retained the belief that I had to do that. So I began to figure out what my search terms should be. And then I put in, how do I define a healthy body? What does a healthy body mean? I then realized that I wanted firm muscles, which I have now, firm muscles. Not like a bodybuilder, but like a normally athletic woman. So I searched for best weights to pump the muscles I want. Then I wanted to keep my heart strong because my family has a long history of heart disease. So I looked at, I found Zumba and step classes in addition, so that I added aerobic exercise, okay? Then I plugged in a wild card. I said to myself, I want to keep being healthy, so I want to be able to continually add in new things as I find them and need them. And so as of the past 2 years, I walk 3 miles 3 times a week on the treadmill, so I added walking to that. When I first started going to the gym, I hired a trainer to teach me how to do the weights and which weights I needed and which machines I needed. It took me almost a year of doing too much or too little. I added in food choices, trialing, failing, gathering knowledge. But after a year, now I've been doing this for decades and I'm 73 years old, right? Cool. So I have the muscles. I'm sort of buff for an old lady and I'm healthy. So that's how I used my trial loop. And I hope my whole process there gives you a good understanding of how the complete chart works. And you're going to be doing the same thing starting tomorrow. Tuesday. Okay. So I've introduced you now to all the elements. And working forward, there's just a few things I want you to remember because they're a little bit wonky. You can't change a behavior by trying to change a behavior. Each behavior exists as part of a synaptic chemical reaction. It will only do that one thing, and you can't change the synapse, but you can always add new ones, and that's what we're going to do. A behavior is a representation, an output of a carefully tested and agreed upon set of signals. All right, to do something different, we're going to create a new cue and a new CEN and a new trial loop. Remember that your brain doesn't judge. It doesn't care what you do. Your brain doesn't care whether you have a steak or you have a hot fudge sundae or you have broccoli. All right. Any resistance or negative reactions are occurring because you either sent the signal using the wrong verbiage down the wrong synapse, or you're trying to push something new up an old synapse that's going, I can't change. Whatever occurs, whatever you're doing, whatever you're thinking, is because you signaled it yourself. Unconsciously, yes. But starting tomorrow, we're going to make those unconscious things that you do conscious. Okay? Now, I'm going to teach you a skill set to take away based on NLP. Okay? We're going to go into self versus observer. And using self and observer all the time are going to teach you how to move between your conscious and your unconscious. It's going to be a little dance. It's going to give you the capability to go outside yourself to see what's really happening. So do me a favor. If you want to close your eyes, you can do that. I'd like you to make a picture in your mind's eye of having dinner with just one other person. Okay? And if in your mind's eye, you see the person at the other side and just see that person, take yourself up to the ceiling and look down so that you see yourself and the other person. If you started off up here seeing two, come back down. So you just see yourself. So you just see yourself. Now move back and forth. Move back from just seeing the other person to seeing you both to just seeing the other person. Go back and forth. Back and forth. Okay? Spend a moment doing that. When you just see the other person, you're in self. In self, you're biased, you're emotional, you are defensive. When you're on the ceiling looking down, you're rational, unbiased. It's like looking at a photograph from up above. You see these people down there. It doesn't say who they are on the photograph. It's a still picture. It could be anybody. You have no idea what they're thinking because you can't go inside the photograph. When you're above, you can see what's going on without any judgment, without any assumptions, without any emotions, without any belief. And the viewpoint is far more balanced and accurate. Okay? It's neutral from above. You notice what's external. You see yourself in proximity to everything around. It's just what is. And yet it's missing the goo from inside. To have an accurate understanding of everything that's going on, you actually need both. One, you'll understand the personal, and one, you'll understand the unbiased, neutral occurrence of some random stranger. Most of us, all of us, are in self almost all the time. Unfortunately, we think and decide just from this biased self place, and we forget to go up and get the unbiased view of what's going on. So we're not adding the extra layer of the complete knowledge set. All right, I'm gonna walk you through a little exercise now. Stay just the way you are, okay? Stay in the posture you're in and where you're sitting for the next few minutes. Make a visualization inside your body. Notice your breath. We're in self now. Notice your breath. The feelings in your arms, in your legs, in your hands. Notice where your butt is touching the chair. Feel the pen in your hand. Notice your body language. Notice as you're listening to the program, notice your position. Are you feeling confusion? Are you feeling comfortable, uncomfortable? Are you talking to yourself from inside? When you're inside here, you're in self and your perspective is restricted. Now, take your mind to the ceiling and look down at yourself sitting in the chair. When you see your body down there, what do you notice? Do you notice readiness for learning? Do you notice a seated posture of listening? What do you notice in addition to what you noticed in self? Do you have any more information from above? You will have more information. How can you incorporate that? Between yourself and observer, you will have a far more complete picture of what you're doing. As we're going through our learning process over the next few sessions, you're going to constantly be told, I'm going to tell you to constantly go self-observer, 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 so you can glean all of the conscious and unconscious data bits, because you're eventually going to notice things from observer that you don't like from that little person in the photograph that you couldn't see while you were inside. So to get a complete picture, you're really going to need both. Try it over the next few days. I especially suggest when you're having an argument with somebody, especially a child, when you're having an argument, go up to the ceiling and watch your interaction and notice if you need other choices. One of the things I do is I've put triggers in myself when I need to go up to the ceiling when something wrong is upsetting or hurting or angry, or when I'm getting angry and I can feel myself. I trigger myself. We're going to learn to do this in the next session. I'm going to teach you how to do this. Up, and I say to myself, Sharon Drew, you need a new choice here, kiddo. You need a new choice. And then I'm able to come back into self and make the new choice. Okay? Because I can't make it from inside because I can't see it. Okay? So, I have one more note to end. Then we're going to be done. Don't judge yourself. Right? Every behavior, every action, every decision you've made to date have all been the best choices that you knew how to make at the time. You've done a great job of keeping yourself congruent and maintaining your values over time. Whatever you've done has gotten you to today. Now we're going to take a next step and consciously design new neural pathways to help you when you want to be even better. And I'm not taking away anything that you've done or become familiar with. We're not going to do either or. I always add, we're going to do yes and, both and, all right? Next session, you're going to begin to capture your own elements from the cue down to the action and start designing your own behaviors and figuring out your own path to change. And here's your homework. I'm giving you plenty of homework for the next session. I know Pete told me not to do this, but I'm doing it anyway. Bring in a memory of an activity or a habit that you chose to learn at some point and you succeeded. So whether it's an instrument or a sport, something you one day said, I'm going to learn to play the harmonica, the harp. I'm going to learn to play tennis. And then you did what you needed to do. You practiced and took lessons and you trialed and you failed and you trialed and you failed and you got bought in, buy-in, and then you learned. I want you to bring that idea in. Then I want you to bring in the idea of one that ended up being disappointing, where you said, I'm gonna learn to ski. And you trialed and you failed and you went, I'm not doing this again. So I want you to bring the one that was disappointing and the one that was successful. Okay, bring them both in. I also want you to practice going into self and observer. I would like you to do it a few times a day, because by the time we're done with this program, you're going to be doing it all the time. So you might as well start practicing now. You're not going to necessarily like it, but you're going to learn a lot from it. Make sure, by the way, with your homework, with choosing, that the experience you choose isn't directly dependent on somebody else, because then we're going to be stuck with their responsibility and not ours. So I'd forgotten to say that, sorry. So we're practicing going into self and observer. We're going to be using this from the very beginning in session two. And maybe keep a little journal of how you're noticing yourself, the difference between what you think is going on and what you notice from above is going on. And a little piece of logistics for the next session, print out plenty of the worksheets, the ones that have all the lines going down, Q and send with lines. Print off plenty of those to bring with for the next session.